Welcome to Booking the Territory, a pro wrestling podcast hosted by Mike Mills and Doc Turner. This podcast is all about what's going on in the world of professional wrestling. And now, here's your host, Mike Mills.
Welcome back, wrestling fans, and thanks for downloading us. I've got another good show for you this week. A couple weeks ago, I sat down with independent wrestling star Big Daddy Yum Yum, a.k.a. Byron Wilcott. And Byron lets loose during our conversation, and he pretty much holds nothing back, and that's what I respect about him a lot. He's just a guy who tells it like it is, and guys like that in this industry, I really appreciate it because you always know where they stand, and they're not afraid to speak their mind. So the one thing is, we're going to get into part one today of our conversation, and we'll get to parts two and three in the following weeks. Part one is just going to kind of wet your whistle a little bit and just get into Byron and his beginnings in the world of professional wrestling. And he also recaps part one where he talks about the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, and the time that he spent with him in FCW. So it's pretty cool. So, but before we get started, I just want to give some love to our sponsor, TNA's Wrestling Palace. They're located in Grand Prairie, Texas at Traders Village. For those of you in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that are listening, you can also check them out on Facebook at TNA's Wrestling Palace. They're your one-stop shop for all of your wrestling memorabilia needs. So check them out on Facebook or on Twitter at T&A's, WRESTPALC. And even if you're not in Dallas-Fort Worth area, they will ship to you. So give them a call at 682-561-6966. Again, give them a call or visit. They help us out, so please help them. And you won't be disappointed. They have everything. Replica belts, action figures, wrestling rings, anything that the kids will like, trust me, they have it. So thanks again to TNA's Wrestling Palace for their support. So like I was saying during the opening, I sat down with Big Daddy Yum Yum, Byron Wilcott, a few weeks back, and good Lord, he let loose. So today is part one of our conversation. We'll warm you up to what's to come. He talks about how he got started in the wrestling business and his days with FCW, the former WWE developmental program, and he caps it off with his experiences with the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. It's a pretty cool conversation. I've known Byron for a few years now. Actually, it's probably getting close to 10 years. And one thing about Byron, he's not afraid to speak his mind, and that's what I've always respected about him. So, you know, if there were more guys like him in the business, the business probably would be better. So that's just my two cents on the issue. So, and then after part one with Big Daddy Yum Yum, Doc Turner and I are going to talk about the week that was kind of briefly. To be honest with you, we don't spend a whole lot of time on Raw. We talk about it a little, and we don't really spend a whole lot of time on Ring of Honor because the pay-per-view was so good. I mean, I couldn't do it justice by speaking to it. I'm just going to tell you to try to go find it somewhere because it was just worth it. There's no other way to put it. So we really don't talk about that, but we do spend a lot of time dealing with Impact. So, and all the news that happened there, and with Jeff Jarrett showing up on the show, we spend a lot of time talking about that, and we go over a couple of listener questions as well. So sit back and enjoy. And with that being said, let's get into the conversation with Big Daddy Yum Yum, Byron Wilcott.
All right, wrestling fans, I got a friend of mine on the line tonight that's joining me for the podcast. You probably know who he is. He's a very popular independent wrestler. He goes by the name of Byron Wilcott. Byron, what's going on, man?
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I don't go by the name of Byron Wilcott. I go by the name of Big Daddy Yum Yum. Byron Wilcott is no more. It's all about that yum yum, that deliciousness, Mike.
My bad. My bad. I've been knowing you for a long time, and I actually knew you by a different name before Byron, and then I knew Byron. My fault. So let me fix that. We got Big Daddy Yum Yum on the line.
That's right. Now, if they want to look me up on Facebook, then they got to do Byron Wilcott. They don't let That's you right. Got to use your real name on Facebook now.
Yeah, they ain't going with Yum Yum on Facebook, right?
Nah, look up Byron Wilcott on Facebook. I'm Big Daddy Yum Yum. I'm magically delicious. 250 pounds of pure milk chocolate. Drenching it, I'm drowning these ladies in this chocolate.
Ezra, I love it. All right, man. So, man, I've been knowing you for a while now. I want to say we met back in I was coming to the end of my time doing any indies and whatnot. Sometime back in probably 2006, 2007, if I recall. And yeah, you were doing the Angel of Sin thing back then, if I got that right.
Yeah, I was a dark evil character called Angel of Sin.
Yeah, I remember that. So, is that around the time? How long had you been? So let's just, for the sake of argument, if we met in 2006, 2007, how long had you been working at that point?
Man, I started wrestling my last year of college. Well, I started training for wrestling my last year of college in I think February 2004.
Okay, yeah. I wasn't quite sure time frame wise when you got your start. So, where about did you get your start at? Like first promotions you worked for and whatnot on the indie scene, I would assume.
First actual promotion I worked for, like a real show, not like a I got trained by Dr. Dusty Williams and in Bossier City, Louisiana. Like I was going to school at Louisiana Tech University, studied Grand Aviation Management. It was my last, I don't know, 2 quarters there, and I jumped into wrestling training. I drive an hour to Bossier City on Monday and Wednesday, and then drive back and go to school during the week. And so he had a couple of, promotional shows. One was at Watertown. One was at a mobile home park. It was like an advertisement for a mobile home park. You know, that's one of the first two shows I had, Watertown or a mobile home park. And then the first actual, yeah, I know, right?
You know why I'm laughing? Because I've done the same thing. I've literally done a mobile home park before.
Like it's like a little advertising. They do an advertising. They pay for you to come out there and do a show, man. But the first show I really had that was a real show was Hotshot Cassidy Riley had a show in Monroe, Louisiana, and I wrestled this guy named Titus. And he worked for TNA at the time as Red Shirt Security. He's a really big dude, 6'9". And so me and Scott Murdoch wrestled him 2-on-1. We got an ass to whoop. But that was my first real wrestling show. Helix Skipper was on the show. America's Most Wanted. What is the other dude's name? The Hot Shot. The Naturals. So Chase Stevens. You know, it was a really cool show. Really cool show. I met Chase Stevens, who I'm friends with to this day, you know, on that show. And Cassidy Riley gave me my first shot at a real show. So
I'll be damned. I didn't realize that.
Yep. That was the first show in Monroe. Probably in 2004.
Okay. I hear you. And then I know you worked, it's before I met you, but I remember this. I think you told me about it at one point. You worked for, was Rodney running at one point down in South Louisiana?
Yeah, I ended up graduating college, and I got a job as AV operations manager at Lafayette Regional Airport, moved down to Lafayette, and a lot of people, I had some sheriff officers that worked for me, and they're like, oh, you're a wrestler? And I put it on my resume. I put pro wrestling on my resume, and, like, I actually, people asked about it when I was going through my interview process. So once I got to the airport, everybody knew I did pro wrestling. And I guess they thought it was bigger than what it actually was at that point in time. But Lafayette was a really big wrestling town back in the day. Mid-South used to do shows there at the Crossroads every week. So everybody kind of dug wrestling in Lafayette. So a couple of the police officers, the sheriff's officers, they were like, hey, a wrestler named Rodney Mack comes through here all the time. I was like, oh, I know that dude. And I met Rodney. There was a show in Natchitoches. I wasn't booked on it, but Dirty Andy Dalton told me he knew the guy and that he could get me booked on it. He'd make a phone call. And so, you know, I didn't know any better. So I drove down there, got down there. Dude was like, we don't have any spots for you. And Mick Foley was on that show, Rodney and Jazz, and they just got released. And so as I was leaving out, I was like, well, you know, if I'm not booked, I ain't going to stay and just hang around and be in the way. And so I was getting ready to leave, and they were getting to the building. And so I passed him and said hi to him. And so years later, and I met him once before, Dr. Death did a show in the mall with the boating. Like, I think they had a boating expo, and Rodney and Jazz were there. And I didn't wrestle on that show. I wasn't able to wrestle on that one. But I met him there. And so I met him in passing. And so I told Leo, hey, get his number or give him my number. And so they gave my number when he flew through because he was flying to New Jersey almost every week to do a wrestling show up there. And I ended up calling him up, telling him about myself. And he knew Dr. Death. He was cool with Dr. Death. So he told me to come out to his house. I came to his house. He had a ring set up in the back. Met a whole bunch of the local guys from Lafayette. I hated each and every one of them. when I met him, and we wrestled in the back of Rodney's yard and started wrestling there until Rodney ended up getting a meeting. But I swear some of the weirdest cats ever were there that day at his house. I was like, I'm going to kick every one of these guys' ass because of each and every one of them almost got on my nerves. However, me and one of them became really good friends, Retro Thibodeau. I couldn't stand Rhett when I first met him. But over the years, me and him became really good friends.
Yeah, I know the name. I don't think
anybody that knows Rhett hates him when they first meet him.
Okay. No, I don't think. See, there's a thing. The reason I say that I know the name is I don't think I ever met him. Cause,
Never met Rhett?
The shows that I was on with you at that point in time, I don't think he was on them. Or if he was, I just never – you know, never met him.
Might not have been.
I don't remember. Like I said, I know who he is. I've heard the name. I just don't know. I just never met him. But that's funny. He's the only one that you don't hate.
Real talented. He just got a mouth on it. But he's really talented.
I hear you, man. Hey, no, that's cool. So I didn't realize that, man. So you're originally from Shreveport or up north Louisiana?
Originally from Shreveport, Louisiana. Yep.
Okay. So you're talking about Dr. Death. Did you grow up, I forget how old you are, but did you grow up on the whole Mid-South UWF time frame?
I watched Mid-South wrestling. I remember JYD. I remember Ted DiBiase. I remember Ted DiBiase turning on JYD. Hurt my heart, hurt my feelings. They're buds, and then he turned on him, hurt my feelings. But I grew up on watching Mid-South and World Class, Kerry Von Erich, Kevin Von Erich, Iceman King Parson, you know. So,
yeah.
My grandmother lives in a unique area, so we got a lot of wrestling. We got a mid-Atlantic from Carolina, South Carolina, I guess, and North Carolina, one of them. And we got World Class. We got some this shitty wrestling show that was in Arkansas. It was real terrible. And then my dad had cable at the time, which was, you know, everybody didn't have cable back in the day. My dad had cable, so I got to watch a little bit of Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior. I was in the WWF when Hulk Hogan was around and a little bit for Ultimate Warrior, but then it kind of fell off, and I was just kind of Southern wrestling, you know, WCW, Mid-Atlantic, Ric Flair, and Steamboat. Sting,
yeah.
Big Sting fan growing up.
Yeah.
Like, nothing was better than Sting.
No, I think same thing with me, man. Grew up Mid-South, World Class had a spot. It was late on a Sunday night, though, as I was growing up. But I still got to watch it as much as I could. I'd get in trouble for it, turn the TV on. I was supposed to go to bed. I was like you, man, no cable, though. So for the longest, same thing, Mid-South, World Class. I remember at one point WWF at the time went to syndication where they had, like, a local TV program. I don't even remember what it was in New Orleans that had it. So, you know, I caught that
mid-80s
with Hulkamania and all that.
Yeah, WWF was all right, but it was real hokey. It wasn't the same as Ric Flair and Steamboat. Those guys looked the part. When they were wrestling, it looked awesome. It looked phenomenal.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you grew up on it too with me, and WWF at the time was real cartoonish. I mean, you've heard
real
it a million times from people. It was, especially they got to the point, that's not knocking any of the guys that were the cartoonish characters. That's what it was. Whereas, like you're saying, I can remember
Saving
being.
Grace for, oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I can remember being in the Superdome. I mentioned this on my last podcast. I was talking about Dusty Rhodes and him passing, and I'm going to get you to talk about that because you spent some time with him. But him and Flair working each other at the Crockett Cup Senior Memorial Tournament, I think it was in like 1986, but I was there with my uncle. And, man, it was just that was wrestling. Like, they got in there. It was no characters, none of that. You know, I got a cape on. And, again, I'm not knocking WWF from that era because that's just what they did.
Yeah.
Look at them now, they're real successful. But, yeah, to your point, man, you just had two guys in there going at it. So, I'm right there with you with the whole with the wrestling perspective from NWA at that point.
Yeah, not knocking them, but just the in-ring product was always far superior.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest, I've never even I'm not even a Bret Hart fan. I think Ric Flair had him beat hands down. Steamboat, hands down. Shawn Michaels is pretty awesome. But, yeah, not really. That era.
Hey, you know what's funny, man? I was a big Bret fan. But here's the thing. Part of the reason was because I didn't see him as really – to me, he wasn't cartoonish. That was one of the reasons why I really did like him. And I'm going to poke fun at you because I know you always put this on Facebook, and I think it's hilarious when I read it. You make fun of smaller wrestlers. So Bret was relatively small. You know me. I ain't but 5'8", so I can relate to Bret being a smaller guy. So that's why I'm messing with you on that as far as Bret and his small status, but small statue, I should say, relative to you. Because I mean, what are you, 6'6"?
6'5 3/4 with boots on. I'm 6'6".
Easy, yeah. See, but you were about to say, you know, you were Sting fan. You liked Shawn. Who else did you like up in WWE at the time?
I mean, it went through phases. Let's see. When I was younger, I was Big Kevin and Kerry Von Erich, Iceman, Junkyard Dog, Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior. Even though Rick Rude was I didn't like bad guys when I was a kid. But Rick Rude, even though he's a bad guy, he was kind of cool. You know, I liked him. Who else? Sting, Steamboat. I like Ric Flair, but I didn't like Ric Flair. I'm like, he's so good. Why don't he just not cheat? I couldn't understand why he was so good and would always cheat. He could win without it. Who else? I liked Kabuki. I liked the Great Muta. I liked Vader because of the elephant mask, the Mastodon mask. Later, you know who I was in love with? Kevin Nash. NWO by 96, I thought Kevin Nash was the best wrestler alive. You know, I just loved his style. I dug everything he did. Like, I was like, oh, Kevin Nash is the bomb. You know, but, just character-wise, he's just the coolest dude ever. And, his elbows in the corner, we ram his elbow into you when you're in the corner. I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, it's simple, but effective. I wasn't a Chris Benoit fan, until later. You know, as a kid, as a fan watching, you know, I was like, oh, I want to see Chris Benoit versus – I wasn't a Chris Benoit. I wasn't a Jericho fan. I did like Eddie. I like Rey Mysterio. But I like Alex Wright and Norman Smiley. But, later I found appreciation for what Chris Benoit – and later Jericho became one of my favorites. So it just kind of – my taste has kind of changed over the years, you know, where I was really into big guys that – you know, had the character, had a few cool moves, but it was mainly, I think, the character that got me in their larger-than-life presence. As time got by, I learned to appreciate the art of it, like with Jericho and what Chris Benoit was doing. When Chris Jericho quit and he came back for that Save Us, Y2J, and I think he first fought with JBL, or maybe it was Randy and then JBL. Then after that, at first it was kind of lackluster. But after he changed, started wearing the suit, started talking, being real serious, and, I loved his character. And then I was watching his work, and I was like, man, this dude is really coming up with some good stuff. Same way with Punk. I'm not really a CM Punk fan, but telling a story in the ring, nobody does it better, man. I hate his moveset, but he takes his moveset, and he does the most with it than anybody I think can. He'll miss something, and he'll come back right way, way later and hit it, and it works out for him. And it's just storytelling-wise, Jericho, Punk, I really enjoy some of their stuff. Even Cena, I enjoy Cena's stuff.
That's funny you say that. I was going to agree with you. What happens is when you're younger, you see it, because my son's like that. He doesn't understand when he watches Cena on TV, and he's only 10 at this point. and people are booing, and people are, you know, doing the whole chant, John Cena, he don't get it. And I'm like, man, that's just older people that are feeling that way. And I'm like, but me, I'm like you, my buddy at work.
Tells a great story in the ring.
Yeah. I agree, man. The thing about him, love him or hate him, I still think you got to respect him. I mean, at least I do. And just what he does is phenomenal. And the run he's had for this long, I don't want to hear, you know, he's pushed excess. I don't want to hear all that. Look, the dude, I respect him. He's in that spot and he excels in it. He's good. That's why he's there and that's why he's doing what he's doing. But I was going to agree with you on the part about, as you grow up, you see these guys that are heels, and you don't get it. You're like you're trying to understand, man, they're good wrestlers. Why are they doing that? Because my son does that. He every time when he watches it, I'll give you an example. The whole Rusev Cena program that went on.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, Rusev, he's bad. Why are like people kind of like liking him and Lana? And it just he doesn't see it. I give him about another 4 years, and he's gonna start to buy into it and see what everybody's seeing. But to the point you make, man, I can't knock Cena. I don't, you know, and I know a lot of people that do, but I'm like, man, it's the wrong dude to knock.
No, he like, the thing is, they're, like, I don't know, I don't think people are happy either way. You know, you give them something new, the Samoan, the big Samoan on the ship.
Roman Reigns. Reigns.
They wanted Reigns. Reigns. They give him Reigns. We don't want Reigns anymore. We want Daniel Bryan. You know, you can't please everybody. You know, you just got to go with it.
Man, you know what I think's happened in wrestling in the last, I don't know, 4 to 5 years? I really believe it's like they're not even – the fans, they don't even criticize the guys in the actual guys. They got heat with the writing. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Because they're not when they're booing Roman Reigns, they weren't booing him based on anything he did in the ring. At least I could see it wasn't like he was botching stuff. He wasn't messing up. I mean, they were booing him just because it was like the way he was booked. That ain't got nothing to do with him. He's just following creative and what they're telling him to do. I mean, what more do you want him to do? So it's like the wrestling world. It's crazy, man, because it's like the wrestling world and these fans nowadays, they're mad at the writing versus the actual product that the dudes are putting out in the ring, which is completely opposite to the way you and I watched it as kids. It was all about in ring what the guys did. And when we didn't like somebody, it was because of what was going on in the ring, not somebody who was writing it.
It's too much insider information. You know, this person talking about this person and, oh, I don't like him because he didn't do this or he didn't work hard. Now you know where everybody came from. You know, oh, well, he's a football player. Or this guy came from the Indies, you know. And, like, a certain fan base go, oh, I'm going to cheer for him because he's from the Indies versus what has he done to deserve it, you know. Like, even for me, like on NXT, like, you know, you got the guys who are in the spots. And then they take the new hotness from the Indies and throw them on there and put them in the top spot. Well, what did he do to deserve it? What about these people who've been putting in all this work for these past 2 years, you know? But, whatever. But I think that's one place it comes from is, like, you don't get to know the guy. You just read about him on the Internet and go, okay, well, I know him. Versus,
that's a good point.
You know, what he
that's
did to
point.
Build up to it.
Right, because how many, you know, realistically speaking, I've worked indies, you've worked them a lot. Realistically speaking, how many people are actually there watching these guys that are then, you know, once they're in NXT to the point you're making, it's like they've read a lot more about them maybe than they've seen about them, if I'm hearing you correctly.
Exactly, and that's what it is. Like, if you read, not to say Kevin Owens ain't good, because he did a great job in that Elimination Chamber, I think, with Cena. They had an awesome match. But
it was really good. It really was.
From when the time he debuted, it's just you read about him. The people read about him on there. It's like, oh, well, this would be cool. But I don't know. Like, I just think it's not based off necessarily merit. It's just what people – it's not that they showed, oh, he did such a phenomenal job. The first match was an okay match. It was not nothing super special, nothing super bad.
but
right.
get behind him. But there's people who've had way better matches on their debut, but they don't know him, so it takes a little bit of time. So that's the good thing about – it's a good thing for guys who are working on the indies is that your fan, people can look you up and check you out.
Yeah. It's, well, especially now, I mean, with social media and everything, back in the day, dude, when I started with indies in 96, you didn't have – I mean, the internet was just – coming of age.
Just starting.
You had no, you know, you had no freaking social media promotion. Nobody really promoted stuff through the internet. It was just getting started around 97, 98, where the stupid wrestling message boards were around. And so there was some stuff through there, which them stupid things, they caused more heat between guys than anything I've ever seen in this business. I'm so glad that's not around anymore. It's just stupidity, man. You got people on there that post anonymous bull crap. Just idiocy, for lack of any other term. But so, yeah, to the point you're making, though, yeah, there's a lot more visibility with indies now. I mean, they can get their product out a lot more ways than you ever could in the past. So
for sure.
It's a good thing where fans can actually, like for you, for example, they can follow you on Facebook or Twitter. They can also probably, you know, see there's promotions that you work for that post matches, you know, full matches online, where they can kind of see what you're doing before they even, you know, step into an arena where you may be for the first time, and they know who you are and what you can do.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so that's a positive thing. So I'm gonna go back. You were talking about that NXT. So I remember when you got the FCW deal. And you spent some time there. And I'll let you talk about one thing because I saw you posted this week about Dusty. You want to talk about that at all, your time?
Sure.
And the time you spent with him and help he gave you?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Like, you know, at FCW, you know, you wrestle, you're there every day, you know, try to get better, learn everything you can about wrestling. So they got different people that are there that are good at different things. You know, you had Billy Kidman there. He was a good high flyer. You had Norman Smiley. He was a good mat wrestler, tactician in the on the mat. And then you had Steve Kern, really good heel, really good bad guy. And
I remember
then,
that.
Yeah. And then you had Dusty Rhodes, who was like one of the best talkers in the business. And it was pretty cool to be there and be around all those different type people that have all these experiences that you can learn off of. And every Wednesday was promo class, Monday, Tuesday, you wrestle, train in the ring. And then on Wednesday, we have promo class with Dusty Rhodes. So my first week there, you know, finding out how all this goes, you know, I go in and he's like, all right. Like, it's really unnerving to go, okay, well, you're going to get up here and talk for 60 seconds. You know, if there's two of you, you'll talk for a minute and 20 seconds. And so you pick which one you want to do. You want 60 seconds, you want 120 seconds. And you got to time it out in your head. They give you the countdown, everything you're saying while you got a guy giving the 10-second countdown, wrapping it up, while still being able to do it in a talking fashion. You know, when we grew up, not Dusty, but a lot of the other people, you know, Ric Flair, a lot of screaming, a lot of hooping and hollering and wooing and all that, which is entertaining as hell to watch. But now they went to more conversational promo, like Punk's promos. Even if you look at Dusty's promo back in the day, it's really all the best promos, the really most entertaining ones, really came from the bad guys, where they'd be able to be over the top and outlandish. But to do a good conversational promo and get people excited about it without cursing, without yelling, just having a conversation, conversing, and talking, it's a lot harder to not throw a catchphrase in there and just talk somebody into the building. It's hard, man, especially when you're watching wrestling and you're used to the hooping and the hollering and the screaming and the crazy character. But if you look at Dusty, you know, a lot of his promos were conversational. When he's like, you know, he's the son of a plumber, you know, and blah, 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 and hard times. You know, mm-hmm. there's not a lot of hooping and hollering there. It's a conversation of, hey, man, real life deal. Hard times out there. It was exciting, but, and that's one of the things that Dusty was trying to teach, what they're trying to go to, conversational promos and just different ways of doing it. And he listened, this, we got 60 people, you got, everybody's got a minute. This thing took 3 hours to do for everybody to go. And so he'd sit there and he'd critique every person. Hey, this is this, do this, try this next time. Boom, on to the next one. And just, he'd give you little tidbits of information and basically know yourself, you know, get to know yourself and exude that in your promos. And that's what he was really good at, pulling stuff out of you and making you quick and think on your feet. We did this one exercise where nobody knew what was going on that day. We had to come in groups of five. It was small group time. Because usually when you were with Dusty, you had 60 other people around you, and everybody's clamoring for that attention. So we did a small group, and you went in there, and he gave you a topic, and you talked about it. My topic was one time a lion, and then the next topic was a clown. And I did a promo about my dad being a rodeo clown and how it was embarrassing, and I hated my dad because the kids just make fun of me, blah, 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 blah. And he was like, that was a real good job. I didn't think you nobody else took it there. And he was like, you know, be interesting. Do something different than everybody else. Everybody else is talking about circus clowns. But being from the South and being from Shreveport, where it's right next to Texas, I went with rodeo clown because that's what I saw a lot of clowns at the state fair and the rodeos and stuff like that.
He was
always big in being yourself and speaking from your own experiences and pulling stuff out of you that you really never thought about and telling you to slow down, take your time. But for to have to deal with 60 guys, he did a really good job of taking his time with each and every one of you and actually listening to what you were saying. Like one day, like I got hurt. I hurt my neck, and I was out for 7 months. And when I came back, my matches were horrible. And they put me in a match. As soon as I got cleared the first week, I had 2 days worth of training in the ring, and they threw me in the match. Terrible.
So when you were in FCW, you got hurt and you were out 7 months?
Yeah, I ended up getting hurt. I broke my neck.
I know that.
I got a scar on my neck where they fixed it. Same dude who did John Cena's surgery did my surgery. Basically, I was down there, and it wasn't really any one thing. The doctor said that I was born with congenital stenosis, where basically my spinal column has less room in between the between the spinal cord and the vertebrae than a normal one. And we're talking only 2-3 millimeters, but it makes a difference, you know? So
over time,
he said when I got there, I probably had a hernia. And just over time of the constant bumping, the hernia burst. And so I think in one of the matches, one of the hernia must have burst. And basically the bone impedes on one of your nerves. For mine, it was my left, my nerve. It operates my back muscle, tricep, inner forearm, and pinky and the finger next to the pinky. But ring finger. So they had to go and fix that and put a spacer in between it, take out the old disc and put a new metal one in and fuse it together, basically. And so because I had a bruise on my spinal cord, I was out for 7 months just waiting to see if that bruise would go away. They put me back in, not so good matches. I stay after practice, train. I go to beginner's class with the people who were paying to go to the beginner's class and train around with them. And I got better and better. And I had a match with Ryback, better match. I had a match with Tyler Rex at that point. And had even better match. And like Dusty's like, hey, we want to congratulate Mr. Lennox McEnroe. It looks like he's back. And, you know, that meant a lot that because I was having bad matches and I was like, you know, and then they got better. And Ryback and then Tyler Rex, And he was like, hey, congratulations. You've been working really hard. Glad to have you back. You look like you're back on track. And that next week was TV taping. And the day before the TV taping, I was like, hey, Dusty, you got a second? Just a second. And I was like, man, I think I've been working with Norman. Maybe I was thinking you booked me as a submission specialist. And, I put people in these awkward holes that Norman's shown me. Y'all can put it over on the microphone, blah, blah, blah. And, eventually that'll be my gimmick. Instead of winning by pinfall and submission, I'm going to win by submission and referee stoppage. That was my thing, referee stoppage.
Right.
MMA happens all the time, but here it doesn't happen, or even a guy passing out,
Yep.
So that was my thing. And so gave it to him really quick, 60 seconds. And he's like, oh, okay, well, we'll see what we can do. Let me think on it. And so TV was next day. And so I didn't think it would happen on TV. And so later that day, I had a match with Joe Henning, Curtis yep. Axel now.
Mm-hmm.
Went out, wrestled the match. I decided, I'm going to do some of these holes, use the ropes, put them in a few different holes. And maybe Dustin will see it and he'll write me a story. And so we filmed three episodes at a time. Mine was on the first episode. The next week, I'm watching the product, and there's Dusty calling me a submission specialist, talking about everything that I talked about, And he's putting me over, hey, and it's real life. He's like, hey, this kid has shown some promise that sometimes win or lose or draw. And it was just, at the time, I didn't think about it that much. But, he implemented the idea right then and there on that TV, on commentary. He didn't have to write a story, and that's why he was just so smart. He didn't have to write a story. He just took what he was already doing and, gave it out there to people on commentary and put it over everything that I was doing. Yeah. Him and Saxton were putting over the whole, oh, there's a unique hole. There's a unique suplex. I've never seen something like that before. So the angle was starting to build right then and there. And he was just so smart. He was able to not even change his script, just boom, I'm going to talk about it. And he talked about it in such a way where it's entertaining. And it got me over is that, hey, I know what I'm doing as far as submission and some holes. So Dusty was a real smart dude. Always, always very cordial. Always very nice to me. And learned a lot from him, just how to talk, how to converse with people, make people connect with you emotionally. And that's what he was really good at. And hurts my heart that he passed, I don't know what the deal is, but I think we really lost a good one with him passing, man.
Yeah, man, it was, and all I know is social, you always got the people who, what I do is call grandstand on social media when somebody passes.
Yeah.
They got to throw their 5 cents in, and I don't know, it's just sometimes it gets excessive, but I swear with his, man, I just had a different feeling about, when I was reading posts, because the dude was so as a kid, watching him, he was so relatable. Like, it was easy to relate to him as a person, as a fan, because he, like he said in his Hard Time promo, my belly's just a little big, my honey's a little big. Well, your average fan probably back then kind of looked like him, because he wasn't, this Greek god-looking dude. But
yeah,
his personality was phenomenal. I mean, he was so easy to relate to. And you can see it in everything he did promo-wise, and, when you hear the stories like you're saying about, his teaching the promos and just sitting back listening to you is good, because, it sounds like he came across as what you saw on TV was a lot like what you knew in real life as a person.
Yeah, he came across just a real dude,
Yeah.
He lived that gimmick. And, he's a man,
Worked
every day, drove a truck.
Yeah.
He was a good old Texas boy.
Yeah. I mean, in the wrestling business, man, a lot of guys ain't like that, man. They got guys that got, big heads and whatnot, and they just, it's not that they're bad people. It's just that, I shouldn't say they look down on people, but, you got people who just think they're better than others, and, they'll treat others like crap because he did not come across as somebody like that.
No, he never did.
You were. no matter who you were, I never met him, but no matter who you were, it seemed like from what I hear from everyone who knew him, he was just a good dude all around. So, yeah, the wrestling world and the world in general, I believe they lost
and
a good one.
Everybody that I know that is actually wrestling on the indies, you know, like he went to indie shows. He did some indie shows, you know. Like Luke Hawks had a match with him. Horst had a match with him. And just to hear them, you know, their stories about Dusty wrestling, I'm like, man, I wish I had been able to get in the ring with him. That's pretty cool, you know, to say you wrestled the American Dream.
Yeah, man.
But everybody had good experiences with him in the ring. I've never heard about him or seen any reports of him, you know, grandstanding, not talking to people on his own locker room on the indie show.
Right.
I think everybody respected Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah. He was a good one, man. I don't know. I wish he wouldn't have left us so soon.
Okay, fans, that's going to wrap up part one of my conversation with Byron Wilcott. And like I said, next couple weeks, got parts two and three coming up, and I'm sure you will definitely enjoy that. So real quick, before we get to the review portion of the show, thanks again to TNA's Wrestling Palace, our sponsor. They are your one-stop shop for all of your wrestling memorabilia needs. And again, you can find them on Facebook, TNA's Wrestling Palace, or give them a call, 682-561-6966. They'll be glad to hook you up with anything that you may need. So that being said, again, like I said, parts two and three coming up with Byron in the next couple weeks. And right now, let's get to Doc and I and our review of the current week and everything that we saw. Appreciate you listening.
All right, wrestling fans, we're back, and we're going to get into our review portion of the show. That was part one you just heard with Big Daddy Yum Yum, Byron Wilcott, as you heard him in the beginning of the interview. And Byron went through a couple of different things, and he capped it off with some of his Dusty Rhodes stories. But just hang tight, because in parts two and three, it gets really, really interesting, and I think you're gonna like it one way or another. Maybe you'll hate it, but hey, one thing about Byron, he's gonna tell it like it is, and that's it. So you gotta respect people like that, because he's not gonna sugarcoat anything for us. So I got Doc Turner on the line again, and we're gonna go through kind of what happened this week, and there's a couple of things we want to touch base on. So Doc, how you doing?
Let me tell you something, Mike. You're on a short leash this week, brother.
Okay, whatever you say, Doc.
Do you want to know why?
Okay, so you're in promo mode. This is real cute. Proceed.
Everywhere I've gone this week, people have been coming up to me and saying, the podcast is great. In the malls, in the stores. Man, I love the podcast. Love the podcast. Hey, that's nice to hear. But everybody I'm talking to says, Doc, you got to take over the show a little bit more. You got to be a bigger star. It's Mike that's holding you back.
Okay.
So, Mike,
you're
on a short leash here.
I'm on a short leash. Step up
your game this week. All right, buddy?
Okay. Says the guy who's never taken a bump in a wrestling ring in his life. Okay. Yeah, sure thing, Chief. And we will proceed at this point.
And as a bonus for my female fans, I have decided to record this part of the podcast in the nude.
God, that's a terrible visual. All right. And now that Doc got that stupidity out of the way, because he just couldn't help himself, we're going to get into our review portion of the show, like I said. So one thing Doc and I did talk about earlier this week was Raw. And really, I don't want to take a dump on it, but to be honest, there was only two segments that I really, really enjoyed. If you want to break Brock's up into two different segments on its own, it would actually be the beginning and the end. But anyway, enjoyed seeing Brock coming out. Thought that was good. Looking forward to seeing what's going to happen with him going forward, because I just think it's interesting. And I mean, he's just flat out an impact player, if you want to call him that. He's going to make things happen. So very happy to see that. And the other thing was Owens and Cena. Doc and I both agreed on it. I mean, this stuff is just printing money on TV. You put these people on TV, so, and get them out there to do their thing. So I don't think Doc got anything to add with that, so I'm just going to proceed. The other thing, if you haven't seen the Ring of Honor pay-per-view Best in the World, you need to see it. Ring of Honor, without a doubt, next to New Japan, which we're getting a year-old version of it right now on Access TV, Ring of Honor is, to me, the best thing going. The in-ring stuff is unbelievable and phenomenal. I can't stress it enough. If you don't catch their weekly show, but you somehow make it through 5 hours of WWE TV, again, not knocking WWE, you're doing yourself a disservice by not watching Ring of Honor in that hour. Hey, if they're not on your in your market, go to their website. They put the shows on a week later from the previous week. So make sure you check that out. It's not really much more I can add. It's just Ring of Honor. It's just phenomenal what they do. So, and now we're going to get into the good stuff that we really want to talk about. So since it sounds like Doc is fired up, I'm just going to throw it at him because he's talking stupid already. Is Doc, what did you think about Impact, man?
TNA Impact. Wow, what a week. What a week. Certainly a lot to discuss. A lot of movement on this week's show. It's like Dixie finally got the message that they're going to have to do a little something here to move the mark. You can say you like some of it. You can say you don't like some of it. I'm sure we'll argue a little bit of that. But what you can't say is that this week's episode was boring. So, let's just jump right in and. From the get-go, there was a surprise with EC3 coming out and giving Kurt Angle his opponent. Matt Hardy comes waddling out. What'd you think of that?
I'm good. Man, I like Matt Hardy a lot. I like it. There was nothing wrong with it. My biggest thing was the thing that always confuses me here with situations like this is right before we're going into – I guess next week, as they announced, was the match that is going to be Angle and EC3. So we roll out Matt Hardy out there, and does anybody think he's going to win? That's my only gripe. I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with what they did, but if I'm a fan, I guess that's what I'm thinking. Maybe I'm overthinking it, though. I don't know.
Oh, I think, first of all, Matt Hardy's these days is built about like I am. So
I don't think he looks that bad. He doesn't. He doesn't look that bad.
He don't look that good, brother. Now,
okay.
The other thing is, so why is Matt Hardy lined up with EC3 if Matt Hardy's a good guy? And they kind of talk about that later in the interview segment. But I sat there for an hour wondering, well, how does that work? You know, Matt Hardy.
You know, it's funny. I didn't even think. I completely glossed over that, just not even thinking about it, because I guess it's TNA, and that just was my line of thinking.
And the third thing is that while Matt Hardy, I'm not a huge fan, but you can't take anything away from the guy and what he and his brother have done. I don't really classify him as the headhunter type that would go out there and put a beating on Kurt Angle to weaken him and soften him up for next week's title match. So, different, okay. Different's not always a bad thing, especially with TNA, but, I'm not going to mark out like an 8-year-old girl like a lot of people will for that.
Yeah. I don't know. I was fine with it. It didn't make a whole – I don't know. There were parts of it, like I said, it didn't make sense. The main problem I had was I just don't think he's going to go out there and they're going to – Angle's going to lose. So, whatever. That was – what's funny is a segment with EC3 was actually because of everything else happened, not necessarily like a big point or a big, huge part of the show to me. Which in previous weeks I would have said, well, EC3 was the gold of it. So it wasn't that it was bad. It was just there was so much else that happened. So maybe we can move over to that because I believe after what happened after that wasn't it the X Division title match?
Something like that. I don't know the full. I'm not going to sit here and go through the whole chronology in order. We're going to hit the high points and talk about them. But yeah, that British jackass comes out there dancing and doing his Dusty Rhodes impersonation. And then you look at that match and I'm sitting there for when it starts and I'm like, okay, this is the opportunity for these idiots to get it right. Give the belt to Loki and get the BDC, the title back. And Tiger One ends up with the belt.
Yeah, I mean, in light of what I know now, or what appears to know, that he's no longer with TNA, I think we know why that happened.
Okay, so if Loki's no longer with TNA, why do you put him out there? Because this was taped 4 weeks ago? I guess so.
No. Well, it wasn't. It was built for live. It was supposedly live, which I think is actually 2 hour delayed. So, I think. Don't quote me on that, but because I stay away from reading the stuff on the internet about it. So anyway, no. So because remember they're taping the next few days, not including they're taping. I think through this week, and then they're doing the pay-per-view Sunday. That's the whole deal about how do you tape for upcoming programming when Sunday is your pay-per-view. So that's another topic. I don't want to get into that because we could go down a rabbit hole. But anyway, so I don't know, man. I was actually all right with Tigre Uno. I don't have a problem with that. But in light of now and hearing what I heard today, I'm like, well, okay, I see why they did that. But – the next part of me goes, damn, if Low-Key's gone, who in the hell is the X Division now? Like Kenny King and I guess Rockstar Spud? Is that it? I can't think of anybody else.
The champions, Tiger One, and
why do you keep calling Tiger One, man? His name's Tigre Uno. I understand you want people to think you speak Spanish, but the dude's name is Tigre Uno. Call him Tigre Uno, jackass.
DJ, what's that DJ jackass brother? The bromance, that guy DJ. He's in the X Division. You could technically have Austin Aries in the X Division if you needed it. So I don't know.
Okay, all right, good point. I hear you. Anyway,
but do you want to talk about the rest of the Beatdown Clan while we're here?
Well, go ahead, yeah, because I love that. Yeah.
Later on in the show, they picked up a new member, so I don't like to see Low-Key leave, but they picked up Hernandez, who's a big guy. He can move all right. I mean, he'll be the muscle in the operation that was probably the void that was left when Samoa Joe moved on out of the company.
Yeah, no, I like that move. I like him coming in there. I mean, from folks I know that know him, I think that's a good move. He's got a world of talent. I like that he's there. I look forward to seeing what they'll do. So that's good to see. But it's crazy because he comes in and now Low-Key's gone, so we added one, but we lost one at the same time.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one with that group that's already had a problem getting a lot of traction with the booking committee there anyway. So, I definitely would like to see them something good happen to them somewhere.
All right, so we got the X Division stuff out of the way. What do you want to go with next? You want to talk about? Go ahead. I'll let you lead.
Yeah.
What's the next thing you want to go with on Impact?
Bram. You don't always like to talk about Bram.
Go ahead. I had a feeling. Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm a Bram mark because man, he gives his interview. I hate everyone. Boy, that's a kindred spirit right there, if there ever was one. But you want to tell him who Bram fought this week?
Yeah, Vader. What's wrong with that?
It's time.
Yeah.
Man.
Come on, man. You got a Big Leon. Big Leon, man. I'm a Leon fan.
Oh, no disrespect whatsoever. Big Van Vader was the man. Big Van Vader does not look like he has aged well whatsoever, and I felt bad for him out there because it looked painful. And it wasn't anything Bram did. Bram worked pretty light with him. It was just watching Big Leon try to get up off the mat. It looked painful, and I just thought, God almighty, you know, does he need to check this bad? But
all the time is undefeated.
Man, he got up there and tried a Vader bomb too, which was real surprising. But you know, he's going to go down to Bram, and then out comes Matt Morgan. And what'd you think of that?
My first thought was, wow, they're calling them. They have, okay, you're a basketball guy, so maybe we got some listeners who like basketball. My first thought was, okay, they're either about the full court press, because there's definitely a half court press that's happening. Like, you can see it coming. You can see it's like, oh boy. Yeah, they're putting it on today. You could tell they weren't holding anything. They weren't going to hold anything back last night. Between Jarrett, between Morgan, even Hernandez, even him coming back, they're able to full court press.
Hernandez, Matt Hardy. Here's the problem with the Matt Morgan thing. First of all, you're trying to build – this is the third straight damn week I've been saying this. You're trying to build Bram up as a beast. The problem – the only problem Bram has is that he's 6'3" and not 6'8". And so you keep putting him in with these guys that he's looking eye to eye, or God help me, Matt Morgan is staring down at him. Bram looks small. Why are you doing that? Second of all, how many times?
I think you're hung up on height. That don't bother me at all. So well, what?
Okay, so you can't argue this one. How many times are we going to roll Matt Morgan out as the savior, only to be disappointed when nobody cares? I'm not against the guy. He's a sizable, impressive guy. But how many times has TNA and WWE tried to get behind this guy, and it just not work out?
Well, see, that's the difference between me and you. You've been following him in the TNA realm at least a lot longer than I have. I ain't been on a TNA bandwagon for hardly any time. So, I can't comment about the past with that, to be honest. I like what I saw. That's all. That's what I'm going to say. Because I feel like they had to do something, and getting those two, especially on the pay-per-view, they had to do something. Because as of last night, the only thing announced prior to last night was James Storm and Magnus on the pay-per-view. I mean, and nothing against those two, but that's not necessarily going to have a million people buying a pay-per-view.
You're going to have this guy buying the pay-per-view. Now, you know.
So that's all I'm saying.
One of the things that was interesting last night is one of the matches, that's the only matches they had on the card leading into the night, neither guy was there to talk about or lead into their match, and that's being Storm and Magnus. So the good part is we didn't see James.
From what I understand, I was edited out. Even though, like I said, technically it was live, it's really delayed. It's live, but it's a few hour delay. It was edited out, from what I understand.
Okay, well, I was going to say one of the major pluses for me, and I like James Storm a lot, is that at least we didn't have to watch him commit any major crimes this week, as he's been doing lately, and insult our intelligence that those kind of crimes would not land him in jail.
Really? You can't push a baby off a stage?
Maybe in the South. I don't know.
Oh, God. I'm not going there right now. All right. So you got your Bram stuff out the way? You cleaned up? You feeling better?
I'm okay with everything that happened as long as Matt Morgan isn't the guy to end the run for Bram.
Okay. All right. I hear you. All right. So for a second, I thought I want to get into Chris Young and Melendez. Or Eric Young and Chris Melendez. I really thought Eric Young was going to rip his leg off again, but he didn't.
I was really disappointed that didn't happen.
Yeah, maybe you're saving it. Maybe it happens at another time. I don't know. You know, because that's one of those things you don't want to keep doing. You don't want to do it over and over again. So
the only thing better than if he rips off that leg and chokes him with it is if he rips off that leg and rides it around like a stick pony around the ring.
Corgan may call that, man. Don't put it past him. For real.
Shit,
but he may. Who knows? Who knows? All right, what do you want to go with next? I'll leave it up to you. You call it entering.
Man, I really think we need to talk on double J E double F J A double R.
Oh yeah, I'm so glad you brought it up, because when you talk about something that happens that you just don't expect, especially after everything that's gone on. I mean, think about the last few weeks. You know, Destination America is hush hush. The whole, you know, all of a sudden out of nowhere. I mean, literally out of nowhere. Nobody saw it coming. They bring in Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor is going to lead into TNA. It's all moved to a new night Wednesday. I mean, all this happens in a short amount of time. So, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm sitting back on, well, I don't know if anything new can happen now. I mean, what else can we expect? And then, you know, Jarrett, they held their deal this weekend, and they had their show. I definitely didn't see it coming. I actually saw that tweet that he posted this morning or yesterday morning that said, well, you know, it didn't have something to the effect of it didn't happen now, but not the worst thing to happen. And it just was really kind of like, I guess you'd call it cryptic, or, you know, you just couldn't figure it out what that meant. I figured it meant something about Global, you know, his federation, which maybe it didn't, maybe it didn't, who knows. Maybe it already talked to TNA at that point. But going into it, I just didn't expect that. Just to see him walk out, and honestly, if his wife wasn't shooting and she was working, she's one of the best damn workers I've ever seen on a microphone, because I felt emotion coming from her. And looking at him, he's a hell of an actor if it wasn't real, because I believe everything they said when they got in that ring and they were cutting that promo about, you know, I didn't want to call, I just thought it was a joke, and then he tells Karen, hey, you might want to sit down for this one. I believed every second of it. I mean, it wasn't CM Punk-type pipe bomb, but to me it was damn good. I'll let you give your thoughts on it.
Well, in this day and age, like you said, it's hard to get surprised at the wrestling business, and it's hard to
call. Very hard.
So when he came out, I popped, because I was genuinely and thoroughly surprised. And so I hadn't heard or seen any of the tweets, because whatever. But the first thing I thought was, he's going to announce some kind of deal with Global. Then I thought, he's going to fold Global, and he got the lifeline out, and everybody else is hosed. And to kind of reset for everybody, there's a rumor going around now that he's going to buy TNA. So if he buys TNA, that's a different, you know, so just to put that out there, we'll come back to it. So to see him in the ring, I've always liked Jeff Jarrett as a performer. A lot of people don't. He's been controversial on a couple of different occasions. But I've always thought he was a solid guy in the ring and could cut a decent promo. A lot of guys don't remember that he was he had to go on right after his buddy Owen Hart died. You know, they cut to Jeff Jarrett in the back right after that happened to Owen. And Jarrett had to stand there with Deborah and cut the, you know, he's crying and cutting the promo about hoping that Owen's okay. So, you know, Jarrett's been on the delivery end of emotional promos before. You know, I always wonder what it's like backstage when the world champion Kurt Angle runs into his ex-wife and Jeff Jarrett. what that looks like, I don't know.
It's a possibility. You do realize it's a possibility they didn't run into each other there.
Well, and here's the thing, though. If Jarrett's about to buy the company and Angle's the world champion, what does that do going forward? Because I would be willing to bet that a lot of the guys that come out there and pay homage to Angle is that he's probably one of the leaders in that locker room. So you got to talk about chemistry going forward.
Here's stuff you're not thinking about, though. Because it's fun. I wanted to talk about this. Okay. You're looking at the current roster that's there if something like that does happen and he does end up owning TNA again. I don't know if that's going to happen. I think more it'll be more of a partnership, but who knows? What I look at it as, if he did fuse it with Global in some kind of way, he's got the talent he's got on the Global roster. I mean, people may not really, like, know these guys as household names, but that's a bunch of damn good workers. And that's the part that, like, really intrigues me, to be honest with you. Yeah, I mean, the guys that are there, sure. I mean, I can see how that would make a difference, you know, as far as what Angle, you know, and he's got the belt. You know, but, I mean, I look at the infusion of the possibilities of what he's got going on and what he started at Global and what he may be able to do with those guys coming in. Because to me, then you get a lot of talent. I mean, not that TNA doesn't have talent. I mean, you and I have had this discussion many times. I mean, guys like Bobby Roode, MVP, I would say low key, but he's gone. I mean, I love Kenny King. I think Kenny King's great. There's plenty of guys there that can carry.
EC3.
Yeah, yeah. Brand, Eric Young, Brand. EC3. Yeah. Yeah, so there's plenty there. But, you know, think about TNA. You want to call it their heyday? Think about what they had, too, at that time. You know, their heyday and Spike is what I'm referring to. So I think the infusion of what he could bring with Global and the guys that are with Global, that's the thing that I haven't heard anybody talk about that. I haven't heard anybody think about it. But that's the part that kind of makes me go, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing that. So I hope, I hope to God he ends up in some kind of leadership role and maybe a blended cross promotion. I don't freaking know. Not to sound like JR, but hey, man. More job for the boys. I like it. I like it.
Well,
I want to see these guys succeed. Have jobs.
My whole thing is I want more promotions so that gives me more opportunities to not have to watch WWE for my wrestling. Here, the problem as I see it is this. If Jeff Jarrett comes back and buys Dixie out of Dixie goes away, that's an upgrade. But my fundamental concern is Jeff Jarrett going to change the mindset of that organization enough to be able to compete with an ROH, to really challenge the locker room? You know, you want to use basketball analogies, here's mine. I'm a Dallas Mavericks fan. Rick Carlisle's a hell of a coach. The NBA draft is tonight. I don't give a shit who we draft. Because our coach ain't going to play him. So all the talent in the world doesn't mean anything if you don't have the right mindset to utilize that talent. So is it great to bring in a better roster and use that together? Absolutely agree. Will they do it? And that's
well, I mean, if Jarrett's got something to do with it, they're going to use him like they should, considering these are the guys he hired. That's the thing. He's going to use them. He's not just going to put those guys on the shelf. I think he'll use them. These are guys that he's trusting right now with his promotion that he's launching. You better believe he believes in them, or he wouldn't have hired them.
Or, hold on. Did he take that Global Force Wrestling out to some minor league baseball parks, draw half of what he wanted to, and said, uh-oh, I got to change course and bail out on this thing?
I don't know. I told you offline. I've done stadium shows before, and anybody you talk, they're hard. You can't, you know.
So okay,
you have to have 2,000 people in a stadium like he was in. I don't know what the capacity is, but I would venture to say to make it even look like you have a lot of people, considering there's so much open space at a baseball stadium and where the ring is, you got to have 2,000 people there.
So if you know that, and even I know that, how come Jeff Jarrett doesn't know that? And how come he didn't see the AWA Supercard in Comiskey Park back in 1989 or 88 and see that it just doesn't work? Why is he?
He knows. He knows.
Then why are you starting out your promotion?
Well, I don't know. See, that's where you're sounding kind of foolish because you don't know. It might have been I don't know if it was a bought show. Maybe it was a bought show. Maybe it was paid for. I don't know if that's the answer, but there's a bunch of reasons why, you know, he goes in and does it. I don't know the reason, but there are reasons why he would do it. So, just, you know. Maybe he didn't lose. Who knows? I don't know. We don't know the answer to that. I don't know if I really don't know if he's looking at this as a bailout thing. I just don't believe that.
Well, here's what we do know. History will tell us this. If he wins the King of the Mountain match on Sunday, it's a good chance he's back in a leadership position at the book.
That's true. That is true. I don't know. You got a good point. That's a real good point. So,
you know, as we head towards that pay-per-view this Sunday, do you think EC3 walks out with the title?
From what I read, he's not. That match is not on the pay-per-view.
That's right.
Unless I'm not understanding it right.
No, you're right. That's how ignorant this promotion can be at times, is that they run their first pay-per-view in forever and they don't even put the heavyweight championship on it. Yeah, that's my bad.
Well, they got screwed with the whole move to Wednesday. That's part of the reason why. Because normally they got screwed. They got screwed with this whole move to Wednesday, and it's
partially not their fault.
I firmly believe that. Destination America did not do them right. Look, TNA, I'm not trying to – TNA's done a lot of stuff over the years that is not, you know, the best thing from what I know and what I understand, what I've heard. But at the same time, this part, I think they kind of got the boots put to them.
So what is the main event? What are they rolling out as a main event? Is it the – because they're not rolling out part five of the Wolves and the
that's
going to
be on the next week's show.
Yeah.
That's on next week. That's on next Wednesday show. Next Wednesday show is also EC3 and Angle. I just saw it. There's a three-way dance, Kong. Who the hell is Kong, Brooke, and Aaron Terrell. So that's three matches. I could Google it, but screw it. Yeah, that's not on the show, dude. So then we know the tag belts and the heavyweight belt is not on the show. Well, here's the thing, as of right now. Look, man, it's a wrestling business. It's only Thursday night, man. A lot can change between now and Sunday.
That's why we book in pencil, baby.
So, what else you got impact-wise? You told me you were going to piss me off. You ain't pissed me off yet.
Yeah.
I ain't had to give you the Austin piss off yet.
No, you know, I enjoyed last night's show. I was entertained, and at the end of the day, I guess that's the final, you know, what you want out of how to spend 2 hours. You know, I like the fact that they're taking a swing, that it doesn't seem like they're accepting their fate. That they're bringing in people, they're trying a few new things, and as long as you're willing to try new things, hopefully you land on a few of the right things. I'm just skeptical that it's too little too late. And so last night felt like the act of a desperate company, and I hope I'm wrong, but we'll see.
Who are they backed by again right now?
Do what?
Who's their who's their financial backer?
Well, for right now, it's Panda Energy. We'll see. And
they got a lot. They got a lot of money. That's all I'm gonna say. Got a lot of money. And hey, if Jarrett comes back, that's a wrestling mind. That's an old wrestling mind.
I agree.
I hope they do it.
And the first thing Jeff Jarrett ought to do is bring in Jim Cornette.
Oh, God, that would be beautiful.
But see,
that won't happen. Well, see, no, but see, the problem with that is, and God, when you listen to Cornette and stuff he says about Dixie, it's just say she's not his best friend.
Right.
And I'm sure people that listen to this listen to Cornette, so I shouldn't have to explain that to them. But, yeah, Dixie's not on Cornette's, Christmas card list, so. Anyway, I'll leave it at that.
But the last thing I'm going to say about Impact, and maybe this starts to wrap us up for the week, is when you watch Ring of Honor and you watch at an hour long, I watched last night's Impact and I watched New Japan, each one of those three shows, Impact is an hour shorter than Raw, obviously, and the other two are 2 hours shorter.
all three of those shows have more in-ring wrestling than the WWE product on Raw on Monday night. And I have to believe that there's a correlation between that and how much I'd prefer to watch those three shows over Raw.
Yeah, no disagreement for me. Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Hey, we did push off your thought to the side, but it's just that I totally agree with it. Hey, I did get a question from the fans, and this is a good one. We got a few, but just for the sake of time, we're going to go through this one now. So this is from Cedric in Houston again, and you and I have talked about this a lot related to WWE. So so let's talk about stereotypes related to the WWE. And it's funny because, you know, like Cedric brought up things like the New Day gimmick, and then, okay, so Kofi was Jamaican and from Ghana, and now he's, you know, he's New Day. And then he went into other things like we get these, I guess, African-American wrestlers, and we put these gimmick on them, so to say. But, you know, what does that say? Who right now is a top, I guess, African-American talent in that country? And or when was the last time a top African-American talent got a big push? It's just something to think about. I mean, I'd have to think. I'm just looking at the question, so I haven't given it a lot of thought. But I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think the first thing you have to realize is that, in my opinion, Vince is reducing everything to a stereotype and a character. And so, I don't know the man. I probably never get the opportunity to know the man. And so I don't want to speak too heavily whether or not Vince is a racist or not. The sense I get is that Vince is a businessman, and he's there to make money. And if you can get over, we'll go from there. But I do think that it comes across, and this is tough, this is hard for me to say as a white guy, I mean, I don't know, but it comes across pretty harshly because they go so hard into these stereotypes in the WWE, so that, you know, you and I's joke was New Day needed, you know, you could see Vince telling him, we need more jive with that, you know, and so it is very reductionist and very, very has a tendency to come off at the very, you know, lowest common denominator level. And I could see how if, you know, you're in that group, you might find that to be offensive. Because sometimes I wonder how people in groups that are different than me feel about some of that stuff. I do think that there's probably maybe better representation right now with the New Day, with the primetime players. You know, you go into TNA, you have the Beatdown Clan, which, you know, I'm a fan of them. I like them a lot. You go to ROH, you got Moose. You know, do we count The Rock? Is he, you know, if so, I mean, that right there is one of the, you know, I know he has a Samoan background as well, but, you know, one of the biggest stars in the history of the business. You go back in time to, you know, I don't want to go all the way back to Bobo Brazil, but, you know, certainly the JYD in the Mid-South, you know, Bill Watts knew what he was doing there in putting that guy in that position. You know, you had Ernie Ladd back then, Ron Simmons, some guys like that. Is a business that I don't – haven't been in inherently racist in the past? Probably, yeah. Probably just like...
No, I ain't no probably. It is.
True. But most segments in life, unfortunately, are, you know. I think The Rock is one of those interesting cases, and I can see somebody who's African-American saying, yeah, but he's half. And so when is a real 100% African American guy going to be the John Cena? And I don't know.
Yeah, me neither.
I don't know. So, that's a rough one.
And the truth of the matter is,
that's a real rough one.
There's a lot of white guys that like to be John Cena too.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
there's only one top spot, but I think it's a valid point to say, if you look back historically, you know, it's a lot easier to put a silly bird with Coco Beware or Tony Atlas and a Saba Simba character than, but I mean, or God help us, one man gang as Akeem the African Dream.
Meet the gang along.
But there's a ton of white dudes that got really goofy gimmicks as well. I mean, Repo Man and the Red Rooster. And
that's true. Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. I mean, it's a good question, Cedric. We appreciate the question, and I think unfortunately, yeah, there's probably some institutional racism involved. I want to laugh and have a good time and watch two guys beat the hell out of each other. I don't give a crap what color they are. If you're entertaining, they're entertaining. So, that's about all I can answer for myself.
No, there is. I mean, you know, we joked about New Day when they first brought them up. A lot of people said they didn't see what they were trying to do. I'm like, well, he's trying to. I don't want to say Vince. I think whoever the creative was wrote that in and said, yeah, we're going to send them out there and they're going to be babies. And man, the crowd just took a freaking drizzling diarrhea dump on it. And it was like, these dudes are idiots. No, I'm not cheering for this nonsense. So, and eventually they did the right thing by turning them because the fans were New Day sucks and, you know, New Day sucks. And so it ended up going the way it probably should. Not to stay on them, but I think that's why they should have kept the belts because they're such good heels. You could have did a lot to me with them in primetime players. But I'll give WWE the benefit of the doubt. Let's see the story play out and see what they have planned, and then maybe you can criticize it later. So anyway, good question, Cedric. We appreciate it. Hey, one more question, and we got to wrap this thing up in about 2 minutes or so. I thought this one was funny. The next question we got says, what do you guys think as Pope as commentator on TNA? So let me go first.
All right, Daddy. You go first, Daddy.
Because as annoying as people say he is, I freaking laugh, dude. I love it. I think he's good. I mean, he's good. He's bad, but he's bad in a good way. I mean, because he's making these references all the time, and you just got to pay attention. He says daddy 100 times in the show. I'm sorry, 400 times in the show, 500 times. But then he just says stupid stuff to just laugh at. And I don't know. You watch it to be entertained, and sometimes it's more entertaining than what I'm seeing in the ring. So, yeah, I enjoy it. I think he's doing a good job. And, you know, it's funny because Nate, from Live Audio Wrestling, when they do Review and Impact, he talks about him all the time, and he likes him, and I just like him. I think he's good. So quickly, Doc, what do you think about the Pope?
There's a million reasons that you just outlined to not like the guy, but there's something about the guy that I like.
That's my point, man.
And I think about just grabbing a bottle of whiskey at 8 o'clock and just taking a swig every time he says daddy and seeing if I end up in the hospital by the end of the 2 hours.
Oh, did you?
But there's something infectious about the guy, so I give him a thumbs up.
Yeah. You know what it is? He's entertaining. And now
he's got charisma. He's got charisma.
Yeah. So I'm good with it. So, to the listener that sent that question, man, we appreciate that one too. That was a good one. So, hey, Doc, you got anything else before I wrap this thing up?
Man, I just want to say one quick thing. I know we're starting to get pressed for time here. This week, Buddy Landell passed away. Another guy from my youth that I watched in rings. Do yourself a favor, Landell. Buddy was on the Colt Cabana Art of Wrestling podcast, and I don't remember when it was. It was sometime in the recent past. Really interesting read. He was very honest about some of the things that went on. He might have been working to a large degree, But at the end of the day, it was a very interesting podcast. And if you want to learn about how some of life was back in the 80s in the South, then I think you owe it to yourself to go back and listen to that.
Yeah, it was good. I think it was back in February this year. I know I looked it up earlier. It was episode 238, and Buddy Land was hilarious on there. I remember texting you when I first tuned into it, and I said, "Oh my God, it's so good! It's a train wreck, or it's a train wreck, but it's good." Because I actually thought for a second I was listening to Tommy Wildfire Rich. That's another story, though. Anyway, so go back and listen to that, like Doc said. So, Buddy Landell, rest in peace. And man, that was just you're young, man. You're only 13, 14 years older than me, and it's hard to believe that that you're gone already. So, rest in peace, buddy. On that note, I want to wrap this thing up. So, we got part two coming up next week with Big Daddy Yum Yum Byron Wilcott. Yep, I said Big Daddy Yum Yum Byron Wilcott from Main Event Wrestling, and he's gonna get into some stuff, and it gets interesting. Let's just say that about part two and three, you are gonna want to listen to it. So I've already said that at the opening of the show, but you're gonna hear it again. Last thing I want to do, take care of a little business. TNA's Wrestling Palace in Grand Prairie, Texas, at Trader's Village. That's our sponsor. Give them a call at 682-561-6966 if you have any wrestling memorabilia needs, or go visit them if you're in DFW, Dallas-Fort Worth area. Man, they got everything over there. So they help us out, so please help them out if you can. I know the owner personally, really good guy, and they will take care of you. They got everything you can imagine, replica belts, toys for the kids, all kind of stuff. So just go check them out. Go to their Facebook page. They're also on Twitter at TNA's WRESTPALC. So that's about it. That's all I got. Doc, you got anything else?
Hey, you did an all right job tonight. You got a little bit longer leash next week, so good job, Dean Mike.
No, you can stick it. That's all I got to tell you. So, anyway, for Mike and Doc, we will catch you next week. Book it. Just show you how I live now. Tell me haters ain't that.